to the Man Up Podcast.
I'm Winston Wolf. I solve problems.
A spiritual oasis for men. We're not pastors, just regular guys.
Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
So, for the uncommon man, created by equally uncommon men, this is Man Up.
And welcome, everybody. This is Man Up, spiritual oasis for men. Podcast number 220, hard to believe, and we're glad you're here. And where is here? Here is Sugar Land, Texas. So grab a globe, spin it around, and bang! I'm not sure where you ended up, but spin it around, find Texas. Southeast side of Texas is Houston. Southwest side of Houston is Sugar Land. And just before we get started, just want to thank you for the donations and continued support. It goes a long way to help the ministry. We're starting to get out of the studio and doing live events and typically at men's ministries. So if you see us, stop in and say hi. And if you want to book us, just go to the website. You know, we're not pastors. We're just regular guys. And each of us are on our own spiritual journey. But we feel all men are leaders, and leaders of your family, leaders at work, leaders in your church and community. But sometimes that dog needs to be fed and spiritually recharged. That's why we're here. And so whether you found us on Facebook, SoundCloud, where we archive all of our podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, our website, man-upspiritualoasis.com or pray.com, we're glad you are joining us. And we're on this No Church Answers tour and glad that you've joined us. And basically what we do here is we've got a great group of guys. We have a ABF, Adult Bible Fellowship, lesson or Sunday school lesson. And what we do is we get an overview from all the fellas, read the scripture, and then what we do is we discuss it, unpeel it like an onion, update it, and apply it to our lives. So and with that, it's I'm going to go ahead and introduce the panel at this time. And he's a world-class policy writer, bit of a professional gambler, and also a producer of this show, Mr. Steve Titch.
All right, Steve. Yo, hey, he's Steve. Working our keyboard tonight.
That's right.
Our control board,
he's
right?
He's the tech, too. Yeah. Attorney and prosecutor. We call him the judge, Michael Cropper.
Yeah,
hey, Mike.
Hey, guys.
Good evening.
Insurance broker, deacon. Kyle Trahan. Hey, Kyle.
Hi, Kyle. Hey, guys.
And my name is Bill Cox. I'm basically a salesman, kind of the director of the Man-Up movement. And our corporate trainer and kind of group theologian, Robert Koshu, is out on location. And so we're going to bring him in at this time.
Hey, everybody. This is Robert Koshu, the professor. I am not in the Man-Up studio with the guys this week. I am in Salt Lake City for the Association for Talent Development Conference and Exposition. And just wanted to chime in real quick. So we are talking about the Queen of Sheba this week and her visit to Solomon. And this is one of those stories in the Bible that gets a lot of good airplay because it's fun. But I think what we see here is a pagan who recognizes there is something about Solomon's faith that's different. And she is coming to explore and coming to seek and coming to wonder. And I think one of the calls that we have as men, and I want to encourage everyone to think of this, is how do you live your faith in a way that people come to you and look at you and say, there is something different about you? And how do you live your life that's so different? And what makes that difference in your life? And I think that is the central message from this particular subject. And I want to thank everybody for filling in and covering for me while I am out. And I will be back in studio with the guys next week. This is Robert Koshu, signing off from Salt Lake City, Utah.
That it was the group theologian, Professor Robert Koshu. Hey, thanks, Robert. And we're going to go ahead and go on with a basic overview of this particular lesson. Totally interesting, different from what we're used to talking about, and get an overview from Mr. Steve Titch.
Well, thank you. Yes, Robert set us up pretty well from afar. The question is what do we do when someone asks us about our faith? And it's an not necessarily out of the blue, but taking it in the spirit, the lesson comes that somebody approaches us, somebody sees something different about the way we're living, or about the way our life is going, or the way we approach life, and asks, what do you have that I don't, or how did you figure it out? It could come in many different ways. Maybe we've all had different experiences with the same question. We don't know the conversation Solomon and the Queen of Sheba have. That is, we just know that she asked him hard questions. And maybe we can talk a little about what those hard questions might be. It's going to be an interesting discussion, because we don't exactly know what Solomon said, what they talked about, but we do know that she was very, very impressed with his answers and his wisdom. As impressed as she was with his riches and his wealth, she had that too. That's important to know. She was not coming from a place of poverty or a place of want. She was a peer. She was a royal peer, yet she sensed Solomon had some bit of wisdom that she lacked, and apparently she got something out of it because she left praising God.
Excellent. Michael Cropper, your overview on this particular lesson.
All right, Bill. Yeah. Folks, any of you who have heard the story of the Queen of Sheba coming and visiting Solomon, you know that she came because she had heard about him. Robert specifically mentioned he thought it was his reputation because of his wisdom. There are many thoughts by the author in our lesson that Bill explained to you that we're looking at, and it's lesson number 12 in our book. And we know that she probably did not ask about wealth, which Steve just said, which is correct. Why? Because she brought much gold, jewels, and spices as presents to Solomon. In fact, she brought about 6 tons of gold to Solomon. I looked it up in the dictionary about what that'd be. You know how many camels that would take to bring 6 tons? We're talking about 12,000 pounds of gold she brought to him, and spices and jewels that were probably just, to us, would be beyond imagination. But anyway, so she wasn't looking for wealth or knowledge of how to acquire wealth. Politics, she seemed to be a successful queen. She was probably not looking for advice on that. She brought advisors with her to help her ask questions to Solomon about his prowess. As far as military knowledge, she was already commander-in-chief of an established kingdom, so she probably seemed to have everything in sufficient control over it from what we've read. However, she did not think she had everything, just like Steve said and Bill has mentioned so far. She longed to know the answers to her difficult questions. And so what does a person who has everything want to know? And I mentioned that, Steve, we were talking about this just before we started the podcast. The author makes a reasonable hypothesis that the Queen of Sheba's questions would be what most people are concerned with when they have everything and lack nothing. And she might want to know about life and death. They usually want to know about life after death. If they don't believe the same way we do, they might want to say, what are you going to do after you die? We know this because there are wealthy people out there, even today, that have been cryogenically frozen in hopes that scientists will one day find a way to rejuvenate their bodies and to heal them and bring them back to life.
Keep the party going.
Yes, people are right, consumed
party
with
on,
death.
Right.
And the author suggests, and I concur in his lesson, he says, is there life after death? How can I know for sure? What is the path to live forever? Is there really one God? Who is he? How do I find him? Who created the universe? What keeps the stars in the skies? By the way, I added the last five. He didn't suggest that. So anyway, the spiritual answers. The author suggests that Solomon told her of one God, and the questions of the Queen of Sheba confirms that Yahweh, this is interesting, and Bill's going to read the text in just a moment. The word for Lord, as it's used in our text, is Yahweh, which is a covenant God with Israel, who truly loves Solomon because he made Solomon king on God's throne over Israel for God. Bill?
Excellent. Kyle Trahan, your overview on this lesson.
Really, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall at that conversation, because
you might have got swatted.
Right.
Well, they usually had something to swat at right. those things back then. They didn't have, you know, some of the stuff we had. And most of their places were open air because they didn't have our conveniences of the wonderful air conditioning that we get to enjoy. You know, the conversation that had to have been. Because as you guys pointed out, she didn't need... I mean, obviously, the rumor and the knowledge of his wisdom would have gotten around. So she would have been intrigued. But what was she seeking? I mean, she had her own deities and gods that they prayed to and everything. What was she truly seeking? And to come off, as Mike said, praising God at the end, obviously, whatever she asked at least invoked the right conversation out of Solomon to bring enough of the light of God, if you'll excuse the expression, you know, to the forefront, that she left seeing something that she didn't come with.
Excellent. And with that, we're going to go ahead and read 2 Chronicles 9, 1 through 12. Now, when the Queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon, she came to Jerusalem to test him with hard questions. Having a very great retinue and camels bearing spices and very much gold and precious stones. And when she came to Solomon, she told him all that was on her mind. And Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing hidden from Solomon that he could not explain to her. And when the Queen of Sheba had seen the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food of his table, the seating of his officials, and the attendance of his servants and their clothing, his cupbearers and their clothing, and his burnt offerings that he offered at the house of the Lord, there was no more breath in her. And she said to the king, "The report was true that I heard in my own land of your words and of your wisdom, but I did not believe the reports until I came and my own eyes had seen it. And behold, half the greatness of your wisdom was not told me. You surpass the report I have heard. Happy are your wives. Happy are those your servants who continually stand before you and hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God, who has delighted in you and set you on his throne as king for the Lord your God, because your God loves Israel and would establish them forever. He has made you king over them, that you may execute justice and righteousness." Then she gave the king 120 talents of gold and a very great quantity of spices and precious stones. There were no spices such as those that the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. Moreover, the servants of Hiram and the servants of Solomon who brought gold from Ophir brought algum wood and precious stones. And the king made from the algum wood supports for the house of the Lord and for the king's house, lyres also and harps for the singers. There never was seen the like of them before in the land of Judah. And King Solomon gave to the Queen of Sheba all that she desired, whatever she asked besides what she had brought to the king. So she turned and went back to her own land with her servants. And with that, we're going to go ahead and we'll take our first break and we will come back. This is Man Up Podcast number 220. We will be right back.
Hey, pastors and church leaders. Are you looking to create an exciting program that will attract, engage, and inspire men in your congregation? Book a live Man Up Spiritual Oasis podcast for your next men's ministry event. Called Authentic, Gritty, and Unexpectedly Funny, Man Up has been delighting podcast listeners since 2017. We're not pastors, just regular guys willing to talk about scripture and how we can apply it to our personal faith journeys. Man Up is a refreshing alternative to predictable motivational speakers, offering your audience a chance to connect with everyday Christian men who don't settle for routine Sunday school answers. Interested in learning more? Visit man-upspiritualoasis.com or contact Bill Cox at liveshow@manupmedia.org. And now, back to the fellows of Man Up.
And welcome back, everybody. This is Man Up, Spiritual Oasis for Men, podcast number 220. Queen of Sheba, how awesome must that gift have been? But think about this. I was just, as I was doing some show prep, from Ethiopia to Israel is about 2,400 miles. Camel caravans basically go at the speed of a man's walk, which is 2 or 3 miles per hour. And because you're going across the desert through a lot of that, you're limited to 9 or 10 hours of travel, which would mean that would take about 80 days to complete a trip like that one way. And so the thing about it is, and as I was thinking about this, Queen of Sheba, she was probably about the same age as Solomon. She probably, and I don't know the story.
We are told that this is now 20 years since he is taken the throne.
This was in
Kings. So he's built the temple. He's built his palace. So he's now right now at the height. So figure out if we were going by 20, he's about 40. He's middle-aged.
Right.
She could. Yeah, that's not a reasonable assumption.
And she's probably followed his career, and probably because she was a queen, her family, royal family, probably had a relationship with David. And so what I'm saying is it's kind of like the mutual respect neighborhood of what they have. I mean, Sheba and Solomon. And you know, think about it. I don't know if you've ever been like the top salesman or the top writer or the top attorney or whatever, and then of your group, and then you get together with the other groups and you gravitate to the tops of the other group. So I think there's like maybe a mutual admiration.
I think you're quite right. I think you have to assume they were already trading, that there was diplomatic relations between the countries, between the kingdoms. But this was a gala state visit. I mean, this is like, whoa. I mean, Hiram and Solomon got along, but Hiram was not that far away. Hiram was pretty much up the coast. If Solomon is in Jerusalem, King Hiram would be around where Beirut is. So that was not 80 days. It was probably 10, maybe, and certainly by messenger, very quick. Yes, here you've got
moving a small city.
This probably was the biggest thing since they dedicated the temple.
And you gotta imagine. I mean, think about this. People in my lifetime that would have garnered this kind of admiration and about the same age. The only thing I could come up with was JFK. You know, someone that would be that internationally respected for a wisdom at a young age and something, you know, I mean, that would have the charisma of Solomon and would be respected like that. That was the closest thing that I could come up with that I could think of.
To get this much, much reputation as Solomon had, and I think I was inferring to this, but I may not have made it clear, I think there was a lot more than just his wisdom. I think the building of the temple, for instance, was phenomenal. We all know it was exquisite. There was nothing like it. It had gold doors. Inside it was completely gold. He built a palace for himself that was huge and made of expensive woods and had jewels in it. Right. He built a palace for his wife from Egypt, I believe. Is that correct, guys?
One of them, yes.
And then, yes, one of them. And then he built another, I want to say, a playhouse for himself in the forests of Lebanon. So together, those things, if you would say that anybody here in Europe heard of Michael Cropper, they would probably laugh and say, who?
Right.
So with Solomon's reputation came, I think, the introduction, the fact that there is somebody over in Israel that is super wealthy, and God has given it to him. So it's not, I think it's a combination of two things, of wealth.
Right.
Yes, he
does.
Right. Yes, that's the important thing. So I find
it. And he's not squandering it. And it's not, the integrity, I think there's, the integrity is what's going with it, because it sounds like, from what the context, plenty of people were wealthy. okay? Mm-hmm. But what she respected about is the way that he handled the wealth.
This might be, because we've been talking about this for the last few weeks.
Yeah.
This might be Solomon finally coming into his own, or being recognized as coming into his own, because we talked last week about, you know, did he get handed everything? Maybe that's what the naysayers would say. And now you have the Queen of Sheba, and the big thing, taking it back to what you were saying, Bill, she is coming to see him. And that is a big deal. She is taking the trip. Her royal majesty is getting on the camels and taking the trip to see him, honoring him with a visit. That is a huge statement in and of itself.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, I'm going to throw this out there just because I was thinking of it anyway. I think today, though, the man's spin on this particular lesson is wealth comes and goes as far as monetary wealth, but wealth of knowledge and wealth of habits is something that is totally different. And I think we can look at this is that she was seeking out, if not a mentor, certainly someone who was going through the same thing as her, seeking someone that was at her level, that understood the level that she was at in her own country. And so,
well, there's only certain conversations you can have with, you need someone of the same status.
Absolutely.
That's maybe not family or, you know, a trusted advisor or, you know, you need to
not necessarily a competitor either.
Exactly.
She came looking for answers, and that's the point you guys are making, right? She was looking for some answer to fill a void that she had. You didn't see Solomon go over to find her, and you didn't see Solomon go to King Hiram and say, can you give me advice? You saw her come to him and say, I want some advice. I want to know the answers to these things if you know them. And again, we equate it to, and the author possibly equates it to the knowledge of God or the universe, and whatever answers he gave sufficed her and made her sufficiently happy and content that she went back happy and praised God, like Steve said. This is the amazing thing of the text, that she not only went back happy, but she went back praising God and blessed the God of Solomon.
You know, I was intrigued by the production notes that Steve gave us about how Christians take things too literally. If they assume they embrace the gospel, they'll become rich as Solomon. And it just kind of reminds me of the prosperity gospel. And at a risk to open up a big fight, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. It's how what faith does is changes the way you look at things. You may not look at yourself as wealthy before, but you, when you place your values on what is eternal, you become wealthy without accumulating stuff. So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there about the prosperity gospel.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with, like that. There's nothing wrong with attacking the prosperity gospel because it's flawed.
this is
a danger in reading too much into this, because clearly the author of Chronicles equates Solomon's wealth with his faithfulness of God. But let's look beneath that veneer, and that's why I said Sheba, the Queen of Sheba, has had pretty much everything Solomon did. Let's not argue about the final things. But so
I agree with that.
But she had everything material that he had. And in our situation, we as Christians should feel very wealthy. Not necessarily monetarily or materially, but because we have the Savior on our side. We are following Jesus Christ. And we know there are ultimate rewards and more true wealth to that than you know all of Solomon's riches. But that's really what we should be trying to when someone approaches us and says, Bill or Kyle or Mike, why do you go to church, or why do you believe in the Bible, or why do you do this podcast? They're asking, in some ways they're asking, and they're not doing it in a ridiculing way. They're asking, and they might have everything you have. They might be, you know, the same type of house. And they're saying, I look at you and I see something organized or something coordinated, something about the way you're living. Tell me about it. And you may, you know, for all we know, the whole questions took Solomon apart. Solomon might have just been going along, doing what he thinks he's doing, and suddenly Sheba approaches and says, if you saw the way the world sees you, you'd be really knocked for a loop because you don't come off across like all the other kings do. Maybe right. That's what she said. I'm speculating here.
That's kind of what
the question you might get. You might get, how do you manage to still be a good employee and still go home for the weekend and have a family and not need four drinks after work? What is going on in your life that you're able to hold it together when, you know, I went to the same school as yours, I have the same economic background, we have the same education background, yet why is my life a shambles and yours at least not? Now, that's not to say, again, I'm not being, there are people who are Christians have troubles going on there in their life, but I think it's the way they deal with them.
It's the attitude.
It's the way they go through them, I think, that also makes people sit up and take notice.
Well, I think if somebody actually came up to me, I think the first question I would say is, I'm on a faith walk. I believe in faith. I've been on it my whole life. I believe there's something internal that gives meaning to my life. That's the first thing. So if you don't care about that, if that's not important to you, then that's a garden that'll never get manicured.
But there are people walking around, you know, I've done Zen, I've done Tao, I've done this. What you just answered, I'm not really calling you out, but anybody can say, anybody who follows anything can say that. Oh yeah, I have an interest. What is it about specifically Christianity and Jesus and this whole gospel, let's call it the gospel, that makes your life different?
It may not make my life different, but what it does, it makes the way I look at my life different.
Well, doesn't that make your life, it's kind of like a scientific thing, you know.
Okay,
by,
no.
The fact that it changes the way you look at life has to...
Well, okay. You can take two me's. You can take me and you can clone me.
When I was a kid.
Right. Yeah, of course you don't. Okay. But for this example, you can clone me. And the first thing in the morning I had to do is I had to feed the pigs before school, which was a drag. Okay. But because I'm on my faith walk and I just believe, I believe this helped my family, and this it was kind of like a duty, and I didn't necessarily feel great about it, but I didn't grumble about it either, which I absolutely would have if I didn't have faith in my life, and it just basically my faith grew from there. And I think through devotion, if you're serious about anything, it doesn't matter if it's Christianity or whatever kind of faith, if you have devotion for it, you practice it, you absolutely should get better at it with time, and it should make a difference. And you're right, there are plenty of people, but the vast that don't have faith in their life. But the problem isn't going down the road. The problem is getting started. They never start. They never allow it to be a part of their life. And so they're always having human problems because they only look at it in the human realm. They don't look at it in a spiritual realm.
So. I My answer would be because I had a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. He came into my heart. I experienced it. And then, and if they want to know any more than that, most will say, I'm off. I'm gone. I'll say it began in Genesis with the creation of the world. Right. It created, whenever God created Adam and Eve, he put them in the garden and he told them, don't eat of the tree of knowledge, right? He told them, and folks, do I believe in the Garden of Eden? Yes. Yes, I do. He told them not to eat of the tree of knowledge. He gave them everything they could possibly want, much like Solomon. And by the way, we'll look into the next lesson on Solomon. I think Steve goes into some things that Solomon does he shouldn't do, which is worshiping differently than what he's taught. But the fact is, as God told them not to eat of the tree of knowledge, and out of everything they could possibly want, they desired the one thing that they couldn't have, and that was to taste of the tree of knowledge. And they did that. And then in order to, they sinned by disobeying God, and then in order to atone for their sin, they became afraid when God came to them, they had to kill an animal in order to put on clothes. And this is what God ended up doing, to kill or sacrifice an animal for their sin, which they had done. And then throughout from there, we hear about Moses, we hear about the great flood with Noah. And all through the Old Testament, through the entire Bible, there's a thread regarding sacrifice. And Moses and some of the prophets spoke of a time would come when you wouldn't have to offer an animal for sacrifice to God to appease his anger because of our sin. And then, and that came through Jesus, his son.
If you'd say all that to him. Now, you'd say, you'd say all that here. To him, Mike.
If they're still listening, y'all are welcome to interject something
you're,
there.
Well, you're not wrong, but that's not
that's pretty wordy.
Not good. I mean, and what you're giving basically is the narrative what's in the Bible, which could also be very helpful. But
I'm going to say this,
and this is a church answer, but I think it's a right church answer.
Because
the only thing that works, because I don't think apologetics works. I don't think history works. You have to talk about your own experience. You have to tell, you have to put yourself in the narrative. And so, and you've talked about your story often. Folks, go back and go through our library. Michael talk quite a bit about
he was a rock and roller that chased women.
Yes.
So there's
incentive to go find the story.
Then he went to law school.
Sift through those.
Thanks a lot.
But nonetheless, you really have to talk about your experience with the Lord. And because that's where the rubber hits the road. That's where it becomes mystical. That's where it becomes mysterious. That's where it becomes, dare I say it, supernatural. But we as Christians can't be afraid of that. Now, we don't have to get all weird, but if we're honest, all of us have had, not just us in our room, I think all of us who are Christians who follow this faith have had some kind of religious experience, some kind of experience with God that cannot be explained by science. The laws of physics, or by the material
and
rules.
And no one can refute your experience with the Lord, right? Steve,
right.
This is exactly. I agree with you.
And it's powerful enough. That's really what gets people thinking.
I agree with you.
We're getting ready to go to the second break. I just want to throw this out. I was basically a mean little kid, and really, the golden rule worked for me. Do unto others as you would have those do unto you. But there's also, according to my dad, a silver rule. Don't do unto others as you would not have them do unto you. And I can tell you, between both of those modified my behavior in a positive way. So, and with that, we're going to go ahead and take our second break. This is Man Up. Podcast number 220. We will be right back.
You are listening to the Man Up Podcast, spiritual oasis for men. Just like any muscle, we feel the faith muscle must be exercised. And here we do it real authentic, the Man Up way. Not pastors, just regular guys, each on a unique spiritual journey. Thanks for joining us. Deep questions and discussions you won't hear anywhere else, especially in today's climate. Missed an episode? They are archived, free for you to select on SoundCloud. We come to you from the Man Up Studios at Sugarland Baptist Church, Sugarland, Houston, Texas, in the United States. Have a question or comment, or want to book a speaker or group and have Man Up come to you? Contact us on our Facebook page, Gigmasters, or WMACox@comcast.net. And now, back to fellows of Man Up.
And welcome back, everybody. Man Up, Spiritual Oasis for Men. Podcast number 220. We're talking about Queen of Sheba and the hard questions that she was asking Solomon when she made the long trip up to see him. And just a couple of things that I wanted to make sure that I threw out on this podcast was this. Do you think Sheba, when she went up there, was trying to tempt or to trick Solomon, or did she just want to verify what she heard?
She brought so much. Oh, go ahead, Colin. Well,
and I had one other kind of question there of, you know, for our biblical scholars here, were there any larger, bigger temples to any other gods that we know of? Because this was a pretty big.
The Egyptians had them. But by now, a lot of what's still there, the pyramids were there, the temples of Karnak, all that stuff that's actually still down on in Luxor was all dates from about 1500 BC, which would put them before this time. So it was a common thing to build temples to your god, and not to mention.
But maybe huge temple. Maybe this was like a grander one. Or
this
maybe
was
this
the biggest,
was
best,
exquisite.
And newest.
Right. Well, I don't know about biggest,
and
but
maybe
most exquisite. Most
well,
exquisite.
And maybe one she didn't know much about.
Right.
You know, so yeah. It's, why do you build a temple so grand to a god, you know, and tell me about him, you know? And I'm sure she had some very interesting questions at that. And I had one other question that I wanted you guys to kind of maybe pilfer. Verse 10 and 11, I have no clue why they had to be here in this story. It throws in, moreover, the servants of Hiram and the servants of Solomon who brought that gold and the wood and the this and the that, and they made some, they made the harps and the lyres, and why that had to be in there? Sometimes the Bible, I look at stuff like that and I'm, okay, that's just a weird interjection of a rabbit trail from prior lessons to me.
I guess they were partying.
Yeah.
Send some more stones. And out. Yeah, yeah. Send some more Hiram.
Maybe
they got Hiram down there.
It may be that verses 12 was supposed to be 10 and 10 was supposed to be 12.
It just kind of reads strange.
You brought up something really, really fascinating here. It's real clear. Verse 8, part of the things that impressed the Queen of Sheba was the burnt offerings Solomon offered to his God, which means how important it was to him to honor God in the most incredible way, because we know that he offered huge sacrifices constantly. It was part of his faith to God and his belief in God, and that seemed to impress him. Impress her as well, as there was no breath left in her after she saw the attendance of his servants, the clothing they were wearing, his cupbearers who would bring his wine or whatever drink he drank, the clothing they were wearing, and his burnt offerings offered at the house of God. So you mentioned that, and I don't remember exactly what you said about, you said something about a God, I believe, there, and this came to my mind. And the other thing, to answer your other question, I think 10 and 11 are supposed to probably be verse 12, and 12 is supposed to be verse 10. It looks like it, the way I look at it, which is a possibility they could always rearrange these somehow or another. Because, you know, many of the verses we will look, they're out of order. The books sometimes appear to be out of order in the Old Testament, right?
Right. Yeah, sometimes
so
they read
it's
strange.
Possible that the person who wrote that mixed up two of the lines, or whoever copied it mixed
it
up two of the lines.
I have to look at this. It's pretty close, follows the text in Kings as well. So this is probably mm-hmm. all
it is? Oh, is
Kings.
That right?
But I'm going to take it. We can check. It's only a few pages. A couple of pages back, but I was trying to find it to answer your question, Bill, about did she come to tempt him. I don't sense it in the text, but I believe in the King James Version. I didn't mean to say that. In the King James Version, the hard questions is translated as riddles. Which
right.
Is not the best translation. It's another case of be careful of the translations, because that makes it sound like, I'm going to try to entrap you with these.
Right.
I've heard that.
See how smart you really are, or clever.
And when actually the Hebrew, and it was kind of a, it really was a later Aramaic conflation in there as well. This Bible study stuff. But hard questions is a much more accurate translation. But sometimes you'll find older commentary that this is kind of where it kind of puts a kind of a dark spin on Sheba. What was she there for? But if we look at the text as it exists, as it's been translated now with better scholarship, it seems she's on a quest to find out what is this Solomon's God all about. And it seems that her questions come from an honest heart. And I go back to saying, when the Bible wants to tell us something, it tells us something. We've gone through David and we've gone through all this stuff. So if there was something dark about Sheba, they would have reported it, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, knowledge and wisdom, it's power. Mm-hmm. I mean, the more you know, the better you're able to control things. And with Solomon being such a known person for his wisdom, she sought him out. Again, I think the added part of being part of the trading, I know somebody mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, she
I mean, you know, one of the big things that mm-hmm. comes out of Egypt and Africa is frankincense, which was a big mm-hmm. commodity in Israel. So, partly I think it would have been keeping up trade as well, or establishing, depending on what new commodities she may have had.
Well, I also like the idea that what Steve said earlier, as we get down to the end and get to our final comments on this particular podcast about Queen of Sheba, it probably could have been a state dinner. And if, as far as like I said, you know, politics, he may have looked like JFK from afar, up and comer, awesome, in a country that is really up and coming as well, with a lot of wealth. And then she goes there and has a state dinner, and it may be something like the relationship that Reagan and Margaret Thatcher had. They were both heads of large countries that were powerful, and they got along. They just seemed to help each other. And I think maybe this Sheba on her way up, it may have been just about trade and a relationship, but found someone that was at her level, someone that she really connected with. So anyway, we're coming down to the end of podcast number 220. Want to just get some final thoughts and takeaways from the fellas, and start with Kyle Trahan.
You guys have been talking you know, tonight to be ready to be able to speak as to why you know the Lord, why you believe, why you have faith, why we're here. And that's still one that I struggle with, to have that at the ready. I know I believe in God. I know I have faith. I know I believe in heaven. But having that conversation at the ready is still one that is difficult. Bill, you've said plenty of times that like the evangelism type of thing is not your gig.
I was going to say that in a couple of minutes, too.
Kyle finally got one on.
I did. I got it ahead of time. All right. I'm stealing material. All right. And that's one that I need to work on, you know, as a personal. I don't know. The last couple of years have been hard as well. And it just makes you rethink everything, I guess. And I think that's a good thing to do every now and then, because you reevaluate your life. You maybe find out where you are in the wheel. Again, as Bill says, you may find out which spoke you are at that moment. And so I think we all need to, especially as men, reevaluate and have that conversation more at the ready. I know it's one spot that I'm going to work on.
Excellent. Take away from you, Michael Cropper.
Yeah, Bill, we had talked earlier, and Stephen mentioned earlier that our personal experience with Christ is really our best testimony, our best way to bring people to the know the Lord or refute arguments that they might have. I wrote down difficult questions I thought we might cover and we did not cover. and I'll just throw them out for just a second, because there are things that people have brought to me and asked me about and asked me to answer. For instance, and I mentioned that earlier, what about life after death? Do you really believe that there is life after death? And the answer to that is yes, there is. I believe that wholeheartedly, and I believe Christ is the answer to that and our key to be resurrected after death. Why do bad things happen to good people? Or why do children acquire cancer? Things like that. These are questions that have been posed to me, and sometimes there is the law of nature that is involved. And I think we've talked about that, guys, very briefly. For instance, if you get a driver's license, you start driving a car. The more time that you spend driving, the more chance you have of having an accident in that car. It's just a law of averages. It's not if you get hurt in it. It's not because you've sinned. It's because there are basic laws of nature, which are neither good to me nor bad, that occur. So that's one of the things I've been asked many times. And, of course, who created the universe? We believe God did. We believe he existed before the universe, and we believe he created it. And do all things bad things occur because of sin? No, just what I said. There are laws of nature. If you do things, you walk out in front of a car, you're going to get hurt, you're going to get hit. So my testimony that Steve alluded to, and he was very right on point, whenever I tell you that I had a personal experience with Jesus Christ, and he changed my life, and he directed me and gave me a goal and a target at which to aim for through my whole life, that's what changed me, and that's what gave me direction. Bill?
Steve?
I think what you don't have to worry about is having all the answers. Those are good questions.
Good point.
Because those are the questions you get. You get. And certainly there are times when they're asked earnestly. And it's difficult to say, well, I have faith or everything works out, you know. The pring isn't to fall into platitudes. First of all, you have to, if you're talking, you have to express certainly sympathy and validation of that person's feelings, wherever they're coming from. They may be hurting, and then if asked, the only thing you can do is say, I have faith, and say why. because I've to say I've experienced it without going maybe even to a long story. I can tell you why a child gets cancer. Then there's sometimes a natural course of a disease, but why a child dies without living a whole life, and how tragic that is. The and I really hate the it happened for a reason or it was God's will. It isn't necessarily God's will either. God wants the best for us, and I don't want to get into my own theology regarding this, but a lot of it derives from the book of Job. But I will say this: the answer I can give is God becomes apparent in the way even bad events can change things for the better.
Mm-hmm.
What this terrible thing happened, so what would God want you to do about it? What would Jesus want you to do about it? After the mourning, how does God want you to go forward after this experience? What can you do to continue to advance the kingdom? And again, I wouldn't put it that way, but I would say that's what I ask myself. After a time of mourning, reflection, grieving, I think I do the prayer is help me make something sense of this. And maybe that's part of it, that you'll never get, of course, complete sense of it, but that God comes alongside, or Jesus comes alongside you and helps you gain some sort of transformation out of it. And maybe that's where I'm winding with this, because I won't say I believe. I think it's evident in the Bible. Christianity is a transformational religion. It changes things. It takes a cross and turns it into a symbol of holiness. And I think maybe that's the ultimate story you might have somewhere in there, Kyle, a story of transformation. I was this, and now I'm that.
Well, what happens to me is typically a non-believer or person not of faith that's trying to get me to share my faith or whatever is they typically question an event. Why did this happen, or why did that happen? Instead of looking for direction or a purpose or a discipline. And I don't have an answer why something happened or not, but I do have an answer on this, on my own personal faith walk, and in the fact that I have faith and I have hope that things will get better, and that in the end, through God, things will work out. No matter how horrible the situation, there will be some good come from it. And with that, thank you so much for tuning in. This is Man Up, Spiritual Oasis for Men, podcast number 220. And also, once again, thanks again to all of our sponsors and supporters. So on behalf of our producer, Mr. Steve Titch, the judge, Michael Cropper, and on location, Robert Koshu, the professor, Kyle Trahan. My name is Bill Cox, and we're on this No Church Answer tour. So check out our new YouTube channel. Additionally, we do our podcast with a live audience, typically at men's ministry events. So if you see us, stop in and say hi. So whether you found us on Facebook, SoundCloud, where we archive all of our podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Pray.com, if you have any questions or comments, you can go to our Facebook page or man-upspiritualoasis.com and post it there. And if you're unable to attend church due to COVID or the Delta variant, check out Sugarland Baptist Church streaming service on Facebook, YouTube, and sugarlandbaptist.org, and start Sunday at 9:45 a.m. And when you're ready and able, we encourage each and every one of you to join a local Bible-based church. Why local? So you'll go and participate and find a small group, ABF, Adult Bible Fellowship, or Sunday school class where you can join for discussions like this, and find one that is men only. If there is one, start one. This is Man Up.
You've been listening to Man Up.
You've got answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
dedicated to the uncommon man, created by equally uncommon men.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You can contact us on Facebook under Man-Up. Post questions, and we'll answer them right here on the Man Up Podcast.